And donkey, Matuya donkey, Navadeev donkey, Jamuna Maiki, Ganga Maiki, Tulasi Devi ki, Bhakti Devi ki, Samaveda Bhakti Bindi ki. All glories to the Samir devotee. All glories to the Samir devotee. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. You turned the heat on already? Okay. As soon as the voice came, the sun just popped up. Om Ayanat Miranjatya Yanajana Silakshaya Shakshur Miritam Yena Tadmai Sri Gurve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Namo Vistam Tafitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dhanati Sapadantikam Namo Vishnu Badaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nisiname Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nivisasa Sunyavari Paskachade Satarine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Dureta Garadha Sivasvati Go Bhaktavindam Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This can't found the child of Sri Prabhupada ki, Sri Sri Vaha Damodara ji ki. So, first I want to pass out books to everyone. The body's living in there. Property, the book is free. The others you can give a donation to Pritchett. Discount. The book is $15, if you give $10. Huh? So this is the Madhurya Kandambini. It's our second book now in the Reflection series. It just came out, I guess, about a week ago. And now in a short time, hopefully this weekend, the Harinam Chintamani is going to Subal, who will now do the last work on that, and that should come out in about a month and a half. But, Molly, you can pass one of these around to everybody. Now, amazing, the devotees in Croatia, as we mentioned, Russia, Croatia, these other countries, they're translating the books also. But a miraculous thing happened this time, is that 2 days after this book came out, in English, it came out in Croatia also. So we're still trying to understand how they're moving so fast. In other words, we send them from here the text as soon as we're ready to go to print. And on our side, it takes about a month and a half before we get it back, sometimes 2 months. But somehow, the little time that we sent them the text and then we went to print, they translated, edited, went to print, and got it all back, and they got the book back two days after we did. We just can't understand how they. Subal saw me at the Institute House, at Madhava's house, and he was just also amazed. How did they able to do this so fast? And so it's unbelievable. So they're up with us. Every time we have a book, they are having it. And now this time, it almost came out the same time that we did. So, because this book has only been out a week or so, we don't have their Croatian edition, but we do have their edition of the Shastra book. I'll just pass this around. These you can send back up. So this is how they've done the first volume, the first reflection. And it's just a few devotees, but they're organizing it very nicely, working this nice teamship. So just a few things I'd like to share and do some updates real quick. We'll take advantage of devotees from Washington being here, so we don't want to keep you here too long. America has a lot of things for you to do. Adamadai has, I'm sure, a lot of service for you. When I'll make a few open statements first. This has been a very fascinating period for me, and I hope for most of you. These are amazing days to take a closer look at what is going on in our own individual lives and what is going on within our families and also within our communities. And hopefully we're all trying to take advantage of this. I'm having an interesting experience, and I'm still working with it, of being extremely happy because I'm becoming more and more amazed how much I'm not in control of anything. And so sometimes there's a lot of frustration as we think that we're controlling and things don't happen the way we personally would like them to happen, and so it can put us in a lot of anxiety. Now, it doesn't mean that I'm thinking or that suggesting that anybody should be impersonal. You know, if we're not trying to organize, we're not trying to arrange, we're not trying to plan, then we're also not trying to be, we're not Krishna conscious. But while we try, organize, plan, and do, and sometimes not do, many, many things, at the end of the day, if we are growing in our Krishna consciousness, we're realizing how much that we're not in control. As a matter of fact, one of the major differences between a Majjhamadhikari, an Uttama, a Majjham, and a Kanishtha, we know is Shraddha, degree of faith, but it also has to do with the degree of cognizance of Krishna's power, his Shakti, his presence, his influence. So, in one sense, the Uttama has more faith, but the Uttama is also more controlled fully by Krishna. That means we're all originally, of course, part and parcel of Krishna. So therefore, in our original nature, we do everything in harmony with Krishna. To the degree that we're conditioned, it's to the degree that we do things outside of what is pleasing to Krishna, which ultimately is outside of what is healthy for us, which ultimately keeps us outside of being in the spiritual world. So one way to speak about Krishna consciousness is how much each living entity has freed themselves from thinking that they're the controller. Now keep in mind, in the spiritual world, people surely don't think they're a controller, but they're surely not inactive. They're more active than we can ever conceive of. And they're more active with all kinds of joy and happiness, adventure, because they are having similar qualities as Krishna. And they're not covering those qualities up, because they're not having this false ego or illusory things that cover up who and what they are and what they experience amongst each other. So I see it as a little frightening, but also as very exciting. You know, in my own way, especially the last 2 years, I've been praying very deeply to be more of a change agent, especially in helping people to be able to deal better with their suffering. And in the process of that, I feel that I'm gaining certain sensitivities about other people as well as about myself. And so one of the things that I'm experiencing is this interesting dichotomy of realizing that in so many things that where I thought I was controlling, and I see that I'm not, even though I thought I was giving up a lot of sense of control. But I'm also amazed to see how so many things I'm able to do, or so many things that happens through me that has nothing to do with myself. Well, something, because if I let Krishna, if I'm allowing Krishna to work through me, then of course there's something there as well. But it's exciting because it's helping me to realize, one, that I have very little power, very little control. And on the other hand, I'm seeing that I can do any damn thing. In other words, I'm getting a realization that seeing how little power that I individually have, I'm seeing how much power that is available. If that makes any sense. It's an interesting, you know, kind of duality. I'm seeing that I have really practically no capabilities in any area that's really profound as a person. But in realizing that, I'm finding that it's allowing me to let go and to realize that there's so much that I feel that I can be used to do more than I ever conceived of. And so I'm feeling humbled and almost frightened with realizing how many things I thought that I was doing, arranging, based on my power, intelligence, resources, facilities, personality, charisma. And I'm seeing, Krishna let me have this illusion for a while. Now in releasing some of that, I'm realizing that there is so much beyond any rational platform that can happen, and I feel will happen, and I feel that I want it to happen while I have sabotaged it by thinking that I was more in control. And so because of that, you know, I'm very happy. Someone's always asking about, you know, what's happening with my health. I don't know. I'm just now gradually getting over the flu. Immediate situation. You know, everyone knows I wear socks all the time because I have tumors on this foot and a birthmark. And so the tumors have gotten bigger and they're giving some problem. And doctors who I've consulted recently say that if I have them operated on, I have trouble walking. So they are not ready to do, so it's not comfortable to do anything about that. And if I do, they don't even know where they're working in the first place. They also don't know how to stop it. And then I had this close investigation with my bladder and prostate, and it's confirmed that the prostate issue has come back, and bladder complexities are maybe a little worse. Digestive situation is not so good. But I'm not bothered by that. I feel that I did quality time within the last month of focusing on my health like never before. Took 2 weeks at the hospital and had all kind of examinations and did the, you know, the punch of karma for rebuilding up tissues and dealing with toxins. And you know, right now I got two powerful psychic healers working on me. Jabhataka Maharaj's servant and devotee was very powerful, and a fine disciple from Russia. And many things. I'm taking extra medication and so many things. And big deal. That what Krishna does with his body, that's up to a Prabhupada, that's up to them. But how I use it is up to me and their service. And so I am excited in seeing what I can do and doing what I can, and excited that I can go so many places all around the world and be able to assist the devotees in their struggles, be able to give them love and receive love, and nothing that's happening to me materially is going to stop that. In other words, nothing that happens to me materially should stop my love for you and so many devotees around the world, or should stop your love for me, or should stop our ability to serve in any way that we can based on whatever our facilities are. Just knowing that whatever is happening with the material body, and we are not in denial, we're ready to do what is necessary, but knowing that whatever happens, good or bad, has nothing to do with distracting my ability to serve based on whatever the environmental situations are. It's like if something can stop you from doing what is most important, then, your life gets shattered. But if whatever happens, and even if I leave this body, it won't stop me from also being in all of your lives. It won't stop me from being able to help you to the degree that you're receptive. So, in some ways, it will help me to even assist you even more in some ways, if you're receptive. So, nothing can stop me from my service to Prabhupada. Nothing can stop Prabhupada's service and love and affection on me and his disciples and grand disciples. Nothing can stop my being able to touch you in various ways, if you allow it. And so, therefore, it's an excitement in realizing that so many things are just part of the temporary scene that are there to see how much we really understand and what we really want. I'm also looking at, being 53 years old now and being happy as hell that the majority of my days in this body that I have given them to Prabhupada. I've given them to Krishna. And realizing that when there was more energy, there was, and even now, I don't look sick. And as I was moving around, I was dancing and doing 4 or 5 programs a day, and, everybody was kind of taking off, like, Maharaj, you don't look sick. And I said, because I ain't sick, my body's sick. And the body, it's also, having the ability to do so many things, even if it's having some trouble in some other areas. And I'm not saying this trying to give myself a prep talk. Sometimes somebody's really dealing with some serious mental or physical issue and they're saying, oh, I'm okay, because they're not okay. We hope you and I all pass, that kind of stuff. I was excited when I got off the plane. I was expecting to see snow, and it was warm and bright, and I was just excited that I was going to be in Gitanagari in a short time where I could look a little closer and reflecting on the health, reflecting on what I've done these 3 months, because when I'm moving out there, sometimes I'm not having a chance really to process, what is going on until I come back. Because for me, this Gitanagari is so much. It's as much a dham to me as going to Vrindavan or Mayapur or other places, because when I am here, I have a chance to become, in one sense, more internal than even I do at the Holy Dhams, because there's still a certain kinds of pressures and relationships, and somehow you allow me to have a little space when I come here, and it's good. So, I'm hoping by saying this that I hope that some of you might pick up a little bit of the clue that as we really let Krishna drive more in our lives, that things happen. And they happen really beyond our own realization and understanding. So I am experiencing, as I'm letting go, I see things shooting out now. And I'm excited. And if the price of some of this is that something happens more to the physical for more to the spiritual, then I'm also excited. And I know that's part of what's happening also. So let me just fill you in a little bit on what has taken place. And you'll see, if you just reflect a little closer, and when you read those summary reports, Jishnu just put out the tour report before this one. I don't know if any of you had a chance to see it or read it yet. This morning he put it on. Jishnu, where's Jishnu? You put it on the board this morning? Right. Or any of the reports, you just see the kind of things that the variety of activities, variety of places, of people, of situations that somehow we're able to be involved with. It's just awesome. Just before you came, I'm just putting a few notes to send to Parameshwara about this recent two report. You know, we're always like a two report behind now. And so what just came out now is just, you know, before I started traveling, unfortunately. And now these months, you know, we're just putting some notes we send to her, and then she does different things with notes that come from other places. So, just for instance, okay, so when we, before we left here, for this particular period, we had radio show from two radio shows, a Bay show and a Bernie McCain. And we had a lot of response, literally half an hour after the show was over. People were calling, and we got nice conversations, nice books to send to them. And then we went to the program at Reverend Massey's church. I think some of you were there. And it was in commemoration of Martin Luther King's anniversary, his birthday. And some of you remember that there was almost a half a dozen of of young ministers who were participating, part of the audience. And most of them have been influenced by Reverend Massey, and they're reading books, and they're quite receptive in their own ways. So we tried to address how Dr. Martin Luther King was more than just a civil rights leader. We shared certain points. Some of you were there. You saw the encounter. Now, after that, we went to a whole other kind of activity in Detroit. Now, in Detroit, we were there a couple of months previously, and we had a whole sequence of activities, and one of them was we did the first part of the Visionary Leadership Seminar. One gentleman who was in our first group, who was a financial planner and a state real estate investor, who basically has a job of dealing with other people and how they can helping them to make finance. So he was so impressed that he had asked that if I come back again, and he wanted to organize the audience himself of his own colleagues and financial brokers and real estate investors. So it was all people with influence, power, and also people with finance. And also these people are going to be instrumental in some ways in the future also, I think, with some things that we're doing. A lot of seeds are there. So here we had this now. We worked so hard to do the first program. We put all our energy into it. Myself, Diego Vinda, and Dr. Witte, the three of us were doing this whole day course. Now I come back, which I didn't organize, but one of the persons organized. I'm doing the whole thing myself with less sort of planning, and everything goes many times better. We get all these financial, you know, people, powerful, mature people who are there, who are interested in, you know, business ethics, and interested in visionary leadership, and interested in spiritual aspect of business. It's amazing. So that went quite well. And we have, you know, over 30-something people who are part of the course, and many of them we are going to be in touch with in different ways. Now, this happened because the brother of the same person had gone to Marianne Williamson's organization and happened to browse in her bookstore and picked up my Spiritual Warrior 3 book, then followed it and found out the devotees in Detroit contacted Jamavati and then wanted to be in touch with us based on that book. His brother was a financial wizard or whatever also. So we had one thing leading to another. Okay, one little book in the store, you know, we only had a handful of books there. He gets this, he arranges his financial thing. He's also, the brother is also a leader of the interfaith group. Now we have devotees, Dhammavati and Purusha Sutta, who are binding with them, meeting on a regular basis. It's opening up to a huge interfaith kind of exchange, while it's opening up to this financial connection. We have made plans in our own way. Something little happened, one person, then make something bigger happen. So they're also, we found out why they were so favorable, because they are leaders in a metaphysical society. See, there are people like this. You know, if you analyze I was talking with Isoto about this a little while ago. One of our biggest problems, because our biggest problem is spiritual, but our next biggest problem is actually finance. That in so many cases, so many projects, if devotees had more of a financial base, that in many cases they would be able to access a deeper Krishna consciousness. In other words, they would be less drawn to Maya's attractions. If your Krishna consciousness is rich, it doesn't matter, you just don't get drawn. But Maya has many ways to capitalize off our weaknesses. So in many cases, you know, that's an issue. And for most people, even if they weren't devotees, it would be an issue still. Because it's the way material energy runs now. So here these were people who are into spiritual life, but who have influence. This is something that's important for the future of the movement, so that we're able to have strong infrastructures and be able to keep some of those who are more dominically inclined to be able to keep doing that. That there has to be more people who assist our movement who have influence in the material world, so that the devotees can do what they're supposed to do. They can preach and they can become more spiritual. And some of that will come from our own sectors, but it may come more from well-wishers. Because for most devotees, they just don't have the passion that really is needed to make big money. In some cases, to really make serious money, one has to have much more of a Vaishya kind of energy, and a real strong, sophisticated Vaishya energy. We can try here and there, but to be successful, one needs some Shakti, Vaishya Shakti. So then they invited me to speak at their metaphysical group. And that just was a very powerful bond. And we're going to do a lot of things in trying to help see how to move with that. See, there are people like that in so many places. You know, you find them in, Guru Mahi's group. You find them in Maharishi's group. You find them in Sai Baba's. People who are genuinely pious. They're pursuing spiritual commitments. They're doing some types of sadhana. And they have material competence and material influence. And why we don't attract more of those people? Because we have to kind of meet them on their own level. Or we have to have people like them who bring them in, etc. Because like people, like types of people, we bring like types of people. So, and then we had an interfaith night, which was called a peace, peace visual. And the television was there, newspapers, nice articles. And we had somebody, people from practically all different major religions, and some of the esoteric groups. And the devotees organized it very nicely. It was very wonderful. It ended with each person having a candle and putting it in a pond and making an affirmation of prayer in relationship to peace. And there were different prayers, different people addressing the audience based on their tradition. Of course, I gave the keynote speech, and it was very wonderful. So there was a bonding amongst all of ourselves as religious leaders. And we're in touch by email and other things. So that's just before I left America. Those two short experiences. And then I went from Detroit to Mexico. So Mexico, I went there for Rath Yatra. Said I was going to come back 2 months later. When I came back, the devotees had already done two other books in Spanish. And we're now working together as a real powerful family. Previously, there was some tension amongst the disciples. And this time, it was almost a total opposite. That I was amazed to see how the devotees were complimenting each other, glorifying each other, assisting each other with services. And so I stayed there for over a week and gave rather intense courses and classes. And then I rearranged to... Then I had initiations for about 10 devotees. So after Mexico, then I went to Peru. And so in Peru, we were there just for a few days. Some of the disciples from Argentina just happened to know I was going to come, and they came, and some from Chile. And they took two and a half days by road transport. you know, to come. So I was sort of overwhelmed with the austerity that they had engaged in. We're glad to see them. And we had some initiations there. Some of you remember Param Satya. What was her Kami name? Before that. Yeah. She's from Washington. Yes. She's under my care now. But she's doing very nice. She's heading up the BBT in Spanish, Spanish BBT there, her and her husband. She just had a baby, a lovely little baby. So the first time I was to see my grandchild. And they are now in charge of 75% of the preaching in Peru. It's amazing. They're there for a short time, but now they have a preaching center and two restaurants, and they're facilitating the main center. So I was just amazed to see that the householders, they got a baby, and they're still in a strong mood of preaching, trying to take care of devotees. It was very, very exciting. Part of the reason I went there again was just to kind of encourage them and also to see some aspiring disciples. But it was very exciting, very wonderful. Devotees there are extremely poor, but their facilities in Krishna consciousness are very wonderful. I was amazed in contrast. The country is poor, but devotees have this gorgeous Vedic temple, and they live in the community, and they have very nice houses, very nice facilities. That's kind of closed in, and then they have some nice businesses where they're selling different food items, incense oils, but on a big scale, where they're wholesaling, to stores and shops. And so I was happy to see that even though the devotees are so poor and they're struggling, how Krishna consciousness for them was a step up in many ways. It's a step up spiritually and a step up materially, so that they were able to accommodate their basic needs in that sense. Leadership is a problem because, there's no leaders there, so to speak, except for the two of them mainly. But still, the devotees are, are trying. So I left Peru. And then from Peru, I went to Los Angeles. And so, some people remember before we left, this devotee, Bhakti Dirk, had come in for 2 days or so. So he's a very powerful person. In the California area, for maybe over 12 years, he had these very powerful yoga studios where he and his mother both, they teach yoga. And he's been able to reach, all kinds of interesting people. So somehow, the president of Los Angeles took a liking to him, saw that he was a responsible person. He's from a rather, professional family. And gave him facility to start a yoga studio. So, when I came, very short visit, that he had a chance to show me the studio. He had just opened a studio and to meet some of his students who have been reading my books he's been giving to them on a regular basis. So I was happy to see the kind of people he was reaching, how he's integrating his material knowledge and experience in the new age and professional world, and being able to direct it in Krishna consciousness in a very interesting way. He's creating a whole system of yoga more focused directly on Krishna consciousness. So that was exciting. Then after we left there, we went for our first time to see the Fiji. I have been wanting to go for many years, but somehow it's quite off track from the way we usually go, Malaysia, Australia. And devotees, hearing the kind of way I preach, went all out their way to put all kind of things in the newspaper, four page ads and things, and arrange radio other media stuff, but also contacted the members of parliament and even the president of the country. So I was to meet with the president, but at the last minute, one of the devotees who the main devotee there is Vasudev, his brother. They're the probably the number two or number one most powerful businessmen on the whole island. So they're multi millionaires. So the brother, the president, and they have all these contacts. So he had to go out of the country, and it fell through. But he was arranging for me to meet the president, because the president lives right next door to him. Anyway, it was that kind of experience of exchange. And they invited some of the ministers to come, you know, to meet with me, you know, for a dinner engagement. And we had a chance to, they gave them a salam, and we preached, and we gave them books. And it looks like in the future we'll be going there, you know, a little more, you know, to help out in that way. So after, and it was nice, I mean, the island is very sweet, and the devotees are very nice and exciting. So we were there for about 6 days or so. Then after Fiji, I went to Australia. And so in Australia, we're having, of course, more and more disciples there, and they're doing, practically all of them are doing very well. So I gave a course, and the farm, went to Brisbane, Sydney, I gave a course in Sydney, a course in Brisbane, then a course on the farm. And we saw, you know, devotees right in front of us go through, you know, interesting transformations, and they were happy in being able to deal with some of their blocks. And I was particularly happy to see the number of people who come to the Laos and to the restaurants. Like for the restaurant program, they have like 150, almost, you know, maybe 200 people. And it's people of all ages, you know. It's kind of a new age thing. But they were very enthusiastic and whatnot. Australia is kind of a conservative country. And when you see the number of people who appreciate Krishna consciousness. See, Krishna consciousness has, they haven't had like any serious scandals there. And in the early days, our Guru Kula was very strong. It used to be in the news, it used to be in the magazines, on TV constantly. The Food for Life were very strong. The devotees did a lot of Food for Life out of restaurants, but they would get the food out free in the downtown, other places. So it made a lot of people, you know, very favorable in that sense. And so there's a very good image, you know, they call them, you know, the Haris, the devotees. And so, because of that also, it helps for more people to come close to our movement. And that was exciting, you know, being able to have those kind of programs. Then after I left Australia, I went to Malaysia. And not last year or year before, but before that I was going to Malaysia each year when they have their yearly conference and festival. And they have 1,000 people come together, and they have a retreat for about a week. And so families all over the country take devotee families take off as a vacation, and it's a real nice bonding because they have a lot of things for the children. It's like a time that they have a social vacation and they have spiritual upliftment. And so they run a resort, and so you know the whole families come with all the children, and there's things for them, and then there are several people giving courses, and it's very intense. I mean, it's very sweet. It's fun, it's exciting, you know, it's a lot of recreation and a lot of hearing. But I didn't go the last 2 years because they've been having the same time that we have our festivals here. But I just popped in for just a few days, gave a short course just myself, the festival wasn't going on, and took on some more aspiring disciples. Now from there I went to India. And India was very interesting this year because where normally the leaders, we have just mostly administrative things, and then by the time the GBC meetings are over, everyone's exhausted, and majority of us just leave, just kind of, you know, almost run out of Mayapur, because when you go 2 weeks, you know, every day is meeting in the same room, and it's very intense. You get sort of top heavy. But this year, it was organized in such a way that the meetings were in the morning, and then in the afternoon, the leaders would come together with the devotees and just do bhajan and some reading. And so that would go for, you know, for hours, you know, every day. And that created, I think, a very interesting atmosphere. I think it was good for the leaders as well as good for the devotees to see the leaders together like that. And obviously good that people are taking shelter of the holy name, you know, in such a way. And by Krishna's arrangement, we had Vyas Puja when I was there, and the Guru Kula was very sweet. Vajralila and Divyam Bar and some of the Guru Kula boys, disciples, organized it. And we had initiation at the Jagannath Temple. so many places, like before, each place we go on, we had initiation also. And I gave a course, Vajrita gave a course. I gave a course on forgiving those who hurt you the most. And good reception, the largest number of people in the course, of all the courses. Then, from India, from Mayapur, I went to Bombay, back to Bombay. And this was probably the highlight of my tour this time. Because Rana Maharaj has organized such an awesome program. This hospital, when I first went there last year, I thought it was a clinic. I was hearing hospital. I just considered, you know, it's a clinic, you know, where devotees are trying to do something, and they got a few good rooms and some supplies and maybe some places, pharmacies, you know, donated medicine. But it's a very pukka established hospital. And you just try to imagine this. You got a hospital, new equipment, new place, very clean. In every room, there is either Prabhupada chanting bhajan, or Prabhupada giving a lecture. Or another channel you can turn on, and you hear whoever's speaking at the temple, which is, you know, 2 hours away. The doctors all have tilak on, and nurses, and administrators, you know, because it's a devotee-run run project. That there's a temple downstairs in the hospital. So all during the day, patients, administrators, doctors, nurses are just going in, chanting little japa, doing little bhajan. Upstairs, an auditorium, where two times a week, there's, you know, there's a major program. That when you walk into the main hall, the reception, the first thing you see is this beautiful murti of Srila Prabhupada. And that when the doctors change shifts, the next shift when they come in, they all circle around Srila Prabhupada's murti. They chant, you know, the Shashastakam prayers. The senior doctor, who was there at that time, gives, you know, a little lecture for everybody, you know, to start work. And after it happens, everyone offers obeisances, and they go all over the hospital to their particular jobs. Unbelievable. It's like you're in another world. Only prasadam is served. And devotees even have special wings of the hospital where they put only devotees. So, you know, it's a facility for the whole public. Now what's happening, now just imagine what's happening, is that majority of the doctors are living and walking different from the hospital. It's a place that's gradually, you know, it's like a new development. So the doctors are working in an environment where they're working with godbrothers, godsisters, with other devotees. They have better facilities than most hospitals there. So they are materially effective with better equipment and good care. And they have this spiritual atmosphere where they're doing what they enjoy, working with people who they enjoy, and being able to be themselves fully. I mean, it's just awesome. I mean, imagine a hospital, every time you look around, somebody's offering obeisances to each other. It's just unbelievable. The doctors who are surgeons, some of them are some of the best in Bombay. One of them, he's like so good that he's never off. He is always, you know, he's like such a genius. He was the one who was the architect behind the physical arrangement of the hospital. I mean, this guy is like so intelligent. While he was before working at the hospital, his regular job, he was coming in the evenings to help them to build the hospital. He's physically doing, you know, the masonry, doing the architecture, how the rooms, everything is to be designed. And this guy is so good that he's just always in the operation room. So, because he wasn't able to go to the temple so much, then he was the one who arranged all of this intricate system, how everybody in their homes can hear any of the classes that's going on, the doctors are living around, that they can hear what's going on in the temple, so
So he's doing operations sometimes, and he's just hearing, you know, who's ever given a lecture at the temple. He missed most of the festival, so he's listening in, and what's going on? Unbelievable. Now, they have something that's very unique also. The only hospital in the world that has a allopathic and naturopathic aspect to medical care that's integrated, where they're fully recognizing and supporting each other, all within the same institution. So some of the doctors are doing naturopathic. There's many in allopathic hospital, but they have this naturopath section also. So they have that, and nobody's, you know, fanatical. It's like the naturopaths, but somehow they all have this kind of, and it's because they're spiritualists and they're working as a team, so they have this amazing insight and posture that they really help the patient, because they know that this kind of treatment is, this kind of problem is better for allopathic, this kind, you know, for naturopath. This kind needs both. And so they send the patients all around in different ways. So they have been treating, you know, devotees from all over the world. Like when I came there and I saw how they do everybody, they take you to any kind of treatment that you need. Any kind that you even think. You just mention anything that you think you need to have investigated. And they just send you to that doctor. And they'll just, they just make sure that you get the topmost care of the doctors who are actually there. It was just unbelievable. And I said, devotee after devotee who come in, they'll just run them to one. You know, in hospitals, it can take a long time to get this done, that done. You wait a week, to a month for a specialist, 2 months for a specialist. And they would just, you know, take the devotees through. Amazing. Unbelievable. And for renouncees also, to give all the medicine, everything free. Other devotees, they just charge you just for the medicine. And that's it. All the care and everything is free. At the same time, everybody in the hospital is paid, and they're making profit. They've only been in existence for like 5-6 years. So those of you who know business, for a business to be able to turn around and make profit in such a short time after huge investments, it's just a complete miracle. So I was just, I'm just amazed. And I had, as the last 4 years, Krishna's been having me have some interesting things with doctors, a couple of conferences and whatnot. And I'm thinking a little bit in their language some. And so I had a couple of really nice meetings with all the doctors and the ministry and the staff to try to share some visionary things that they could also be considering as expanding in India as well as in the world and having some influence. And so I've agreed to be a consultant or part of the operation of giving some little advice in this way. And so I'll be going there once or twice a year, you know, to stay for some time. Anyway, I saw that Krishna had allowed me to spend that time. I mean, I don't see any physical difference from all the treatment. Obviously, it helped me internally. But by being there, every day I had chance to be able to kind of be a part of the scene and to be available for darshan and for giving a course and some classes. And also learning, you know, from that experience. And being enthused about how there can be transformation in ways that can have spiritual, social, economic, kind of influence. If people just decide to come together and create teams. Now keep in mind, the way this happened is that these were just devotees who were coming to the temple who were students in medical school. And they were trying to figure out what to do with their lives. And then they decided to kind of connect with each other, and they created something like a little bit of a little clinic at one point, something very, very simple and kind of, kind of ragtag. But they were willing to put Krishna first. Many of them are very sharp, and they could have very high positions in some of the hospitals. But they were ready to try to see what was best for the preaching and spreading Krishna consciousness for themselves and for others. So they took this risk of coming together, trying to do something, not knowing whether it's going to fail or what, by being young students right out. You know, they of course had to put money and time into their studies. But they took this big leap of faith, and all of a sudden it just started happening. And they'll tell you, they'll be first to say, we don't know how all this has come about. And they're just amazed. So that was, that was just awesome to see that effect, because it was like being transmitted to another time, another dimension. And a problem is that when people are admitted in the hospital, people don't want to leave. Because it doesn't have any of the, like, the scary kind of tense, anxious mood, you know, of hospitals. I mean, I don't like hospitals. And, you know, I was there for 2 weeks, and I was enjoying myself to death. You know? I was thinking, people here, you know, Maharaj is in the hospital, but they didn't know I was on a vacation. I mean, I was on a roll, you know. The doctors, the nurses are devotees. The nutrition specialists are devotees. They just ask you whatever you want. They just design, you know, the prasadam that way. It was unbelievable. It was just amazing. So that was an interesting 2 weeks, you know, vacation for me, actually. Nice rest period. Then they have a spiritual care section that's only for people or devotees whose only job is to engage in spiritual care. So they are just counseling people, talking to them. And now this has had such a huge effect that almost 90 or probably more patients who come there become a part of the community. Some of them have become devotees, and most of them come and ready to do services, and they bring their families, and they identify. So the hospital is gradually creating a whole small village of devotees. Because it's a major hospital in that area, right, of Bombay. So that means anybody sick, any emergencies, any, you know, child, anything, people come to the hospital. And so they come there, and they're just so overwhelmed by the care that they get. So they just keep identifying, coming around. I mean, I was noticing people in the lobby just hanging out. You know, after 3 days, I realized, these people are just hanging out. They just want to soak up the atmosphere, you know. It's just so amazing. Now, they bring the deities. They have an altar that's mobile. They take the deities to every room twice a day, and they let the people, you know, offer flowers to the deities, and they give everybody some mahaprasadam. I mean, you just can't believe it. Muslims that come, Christians that come. When somebody's dying, they got like so much care that even Muslims. We're like bringing people who from their tradition who are dying, just bring them to the hospital so that devotees could get them cured. I mean, you just can't believe it. It's just amazing. Anyway, you can't even. I was talking with Malati and a few other people, Claudri, and I was saying, you know, even hearing about this can't give anybody a clue what it's really like until you participate in it. I mean, it's just that powerful that you have to be there to experience this. To see all these humble, you know, professionals, competent, very humble, and are more excited to serve and to give you service than one is in being able to receive this nice service, you know, from them. It was just amazing what can happen when there is professionalism and deep systematic study of scripture, deep teamship with a focus, with a vision in that way. And letting Krishna, you know, drive. So now after I left, and I'm ending now. After I left there, then I went to South Africa. And so I had gotten a notice when I was in India that the lady in charge of the conflict resolution program in Conflict Resolution Center, it's a chief trainer, in Cape Town, was instrumental in organizing a summit of high-ranking leaders of the Defense Department of some of the South African countries, including South Africa. So it was going to be a 5-day course of people coming, and it was some United Nations delegates and also a few members of parliament from a few countries. So there was four teachers, one envoy from the Commonwealth, the head of the Conflict Resolution Center himself, the trainer, chief trainer, and myself. And we were the teachers. And this is being held now at the Department of Defense, South African Department of Defense, at the intelligence agency. It's like at the CIA headquarters. And Of all these people, you know, mostly brigadiers, and some people from UNDP, and here we were having a chance to be one of the teachers. So the course was in negotiation, mediation, conflict resolution, and my main contribution was the role of leadership in the context of peacekeeping. So this was very exciting to be a part, and I was a part of it the whole time. I came just maybe late for the first session, so I had to come by standby. And I just stayed. I mean, I didn't just get the course, but I wanted to also to see what they do, how they think, how the others are teaching, and to try to understand how these people function, and to bond with them for networking, because they were influential people in the political arenas in Africa. So that went very well. My presentation got off very nice. Had very good, very nice feedback. The trainer who organized it was even wanting me before I left Africa, South Africa, to do another one with her in another place. So that's a nice opening, and I'm hoping that something will come from these people. We gave them complimentary copies of Leadership Volume 2, and we will be in touch with her. When I first met her 3 years ago, and I agreed that I would be available, but my point was that I would do it free, but I wanted her to be able to give money for any of those who connected with me. And I said staff members who would come and could do this kind of thing. And she agreed. But it was always a problem with timing. And then last year when I went to visit South Africa, I agreed to be part on their board. So I'm on their board. Now we're getting closer to do hands-on stuff. So hopefully this will create some avenues in the future in many ways for the devotees there, for other devotees, etc. So as I wrap up, and then we had these interesting programs in all the different communities in South Africa, in the white Africana community. They're kind of new to the New Age scene. So you have all these very wealthy people who are now like trying to explore alternatives. And so they're middle-aged people, very established, very plus mansions. So I did two programs like that. One was about 75 people, another about 50 people, and they were extremely favorable. A lot of TV, radio, and other things. So the tour, again, if you just look, at each tour, only at this one, for instance, and we see interesting things with devotees, interesting things with leadership, interesting things with politicians, interesting things with the media, books going all over the place, and so. Interesting to see how this is beginning to unfold in more and more ways. But my biggest concern, obviously, is looking at the degree that people in the secular world as well as in the devotee communities are actually suffering. And how, especially in the devotee communities, how we can be able to understand how adversity is another way to create possibilities and to serve Krishna. How we can go deeper and being able to realize that as devotees, we're not supposed to just think ordinary or just do ordinary things and be satisfied with that. That as devotees, we are not just wanting to be successful, based on, the material paradigm. We don't want to deny the joy of being able to struggle. For Krishna. It's like part of my happiness is realizing, hey, I did a lot of damn struggling for Prabhupada for 30-something years, and I can struggle more. And I'm excited like that. I'm excited like, hey, for somebody who I'm trying to love, I can make some sacrifice and struggle for them. And so whether I'm really healthy or not so healthy, I can still struggle. And that like brings great sense of satisfaction, because it's a sense of identity, sense of purpose, and a sense of, excitement about putting energies into trying to be creative in his behalf. When I came back, I was trying to go to South America. So this was an amazing karma trip in terms of travel also. When I left India, I had a hard time getting into South Africa because the cricket game was going. And all the flights were booked, so I was in three standbys, just trying to see how to get to India. And then I'm going to get to South Africa. Then when I got to South Africa, I had to decide whether I was going to go to West Africa or not. So the voters expected me to come to Nigeria, Ivory Coast, and to Ghana. Now war, some residual war is still going on Ivory Coast. The people I met at the Conflict Resolution Center, one of the gentlemen from the UN, who also has connection with Nigeria, was just in touch with one or two of the governors there, and he was just warning me, look, don't go to Nigeria now. He said, the place is about to rock. You know, the elections are coming up, and already there was some tribal wars going on in Warri and with the oil. And he was telling me that, look, he says, you know, it would be a fool to go there now because it looks like it's going to be some very serious things going on. So that was impinging upon me, as well as Ivory Coast is having a problem. And then on top of it, you know, I wasn't able to get a visa. I was trying all kind of ways to get a visa to Nigeria. See, right now, it's a little uncomfortable or dangerous traveling on an American passport. I don't know what you're hearing here in the news, but all over the world, people are very anti-American in a heavier way than it's practically ever been. I think that's why I got sent back from Brazil also, just because I was having an American passport. So I was realizing, if I go to Nigeria, and I'm doing all like I usually do, I do all this national TV stuff, and I you know, we organize some interfaith things, so many things. But all I'm going to run into is people bashing America, and people telling me, go back home, and talk to Bush, or go back home and talk to your people about you know about being so cocky. Plus, I realize that if I speak anything bad about America, I get marked. Because now with this terrorist stuff, we have to be very careful about what they're saying, you know, in the public. And if I didn't say things bad about America, then the Muslims in those countries would mark our institution. So I was processing all of this, and then once I didn't get the visa, I realized, this is a sign that I ain't supposed to go. So I'm not going to go. So then I routed my round-the-world trip ticket to go to Brazil, to Chile, maybe Argentina, and then to Puerto Rico on my way coming back up here. So I went all the way to Brazil, got there, and I had a five-year visa from when I was there many years ago. But the visa had expired. So they were like so rude. And I think it has to do also because of the American passport. So they've sent me back on the same plane. After over 10 hours on the plane, they sent me right back. And I was trying to go to the neighboring country, or just let me stay the next day to get a flight out. I had onward tickets to other places, and they've sent me back. A huge fine to the airlines, and made them pay for my ticket, $1,000 just to go back also. And I think they charged like, I don't know, $40,000, $50,000 fine. The airlines, because the airline wasn't supposed to let me on. They were supposed to see that my visa had expired. So now when I get back to South Africa, I decided I'm going back to America. So I routed my ticket, and in literally in hours, I was on my way to America. The fastest way was to come to Atlanta. So I had 18, now here at the 10, almost 20-something hours. Then I go another 20 hours, 18 and a half hours, to come to Atlanta. I mean, you can imagine the airs in my body. Just such a trip. And it was hellish because I had to sit next to a guy who was drunk. You know, unbelievable. And this guy was like so filthy drunk. You know, he had come on the plane a little intoxicated. He was drinking from the stewardess, and then he had snuck this bottle off. And so after about 2 hours, the guy didn't know his right from left. He tried to get up to the bathroom. He was falling on people. And then he started spitting and throwing up. And he started throwing himself at me. And I was throwing him back. And he thought, I was like, oh, my God. What travel karma I have, you know, during this period. So then, unbelievable. So the end result is that I went to Atlanta. And I stayed there for a couple of days. Really nice. I was glad I went. And again, I promised them that I'd come once a year. All this once a year, I don't know how I'm going to do it. But it just seemed that it fitted, that I was supposed to come. I saw how Krishna had a hand in that. I wasn't supposed to go to South America at that time, but I was supposed to come to Atlanta. And so I went there. And Balabhadra, who we've known for a long time, Sikhi Mahidi, a devotee who went with us to Africa when we first started, and several other devotees were there, and it seemed like my presence was very important for them, and hopefully for the project. And then I had a chance to meet some of my contacts from Dr. Martin Luther King's organization. I took Balabhadra and them and a few others around to introduce them to these people, so they could have more influence with them in the city, in the state. And then I went to the Carter Center, and then to the Martin Luther King Center. I'd never seen these, saw these places, and thought it's a good chance, good time, opportunity, you know, to be able to visit. And of course now, and I went to, and I came into the institute. I thought it was going to be snowing. It was 86 degrees, 85 degrees that day. I was excited. I saw Madhava smiling in the sun all behind him. Weather was nice. And then when I got to the institute, I was processing in terms of my health, and I really felt, and also wanted to see Ekavira and Vajra Lila about some things about the GBC meeting and about the property and the lawsuit. And so I just realized that I needed to come here quicker to try to decide if I'm going to go ahead and do the operation now or do it later. And if I do, of course, I'll be in Washington for some time. So what I'm deciding now is maybe to wait for a while on that. Because while I was at the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, the urologist I met there informed me of another kind of medicine that supposedly works in 50% of the cases, and it has the ability to shrink the prostate from blocking the bladder. And so I thought that I would try, but it takes 6 months before you know if it works. So my kind of dilemma now is if my present situation holds up sufficiently for that 6 months period, I'm going to try to go for it. But if I find that the complications are beyond my ability to function, and then I'll just get the operation. Now the difficulty is that if it happens after I leave, then I guess I'll just have to come back, in essence. Or I may know before I leave America. So I don't have a clue of what's happening on that side. But as I said, I'm not in any anxiety about it. I'll do what has to be done. And I'm so absorbed in being happy and having gratitude about what is happening. I mean, it's like just being here. I'm looking out at all of you. And so I'm just excited, in seeing you. I know what you're going through. I know how you're trying in many ways. A few of you are, way below the mark. But I realize that, hey, this is so wonderful. And let me give an example. Especially those of you who have children. Just think how wonderful it is at the moments and times when you're able to experience, the love from your child, and you're able to give love. Now, magnify that almost 1,000 times. I mean, think of the beauty of my life and also the distress of my life. Because magnify it when you are having problems with your child, or your child is in anxiety, or your child is in some unusual space, or your child is cheating or whatever, and how much pain that gives you. Now also look at the other side when you see how your child is growing. It's like, you're all around the kids every day. But you don't realize how every one of these kids has grown in 3 months. Every one of them are so much taller than they were when I was here. I mean, I'm amazed. Just in a few months' time, how they're growing. It's just unbelievable. I mean, it's almost like each of them is like a different person. It's hard to see how Dhammacharya and Bhagavan have grown so much. What's the kids here? Maybe you just look at them and see that you see this changes of the clothes size they wear, everything. But they're really growing. And so you're looking at them and you're realizing how this is a life, this entity, who has his or her own personality. And something that you do is going to impact upon their personality, impact upon who they are. So then that's an excitement when you feel that you can offer something or do something. It's an excitement as you're watching in anticipation of what will be the next kind of unfoldment that they experience. It's also anxiety about what may go wrong. So you magnify that. At the end, what you come out with is a pretty absorbing life. Huh? whether it's about a thousand people you're in anxiety about, or almost a thousand people who you're just going from one place to another place, and you're just getting blasted with their love, and you're receiving and you're giving. It's just awesome. And that's why even the physical situation is not so much a botheration, because one, I see how for many of the devotees, their own life is becoming stricter and their love is becoming stronger. Others are just into the selfish thing. But I see many places I went, some of the devotees have raised their standard, because they're realizing that we're locked in also. They realize also that part of my health problem is them. And so, although this sickness is there, that I see that it is helping many disciples in actually becoming more focused in their spiritual life. And as I go around, and every place, I just have so many grandchildren, all over. In Australia, in Peru, in Africa, in Mexico. So many children, so many grandchildren. So now you see that. You take about 1,000 children, and you take almost a couple of hundred of grandchildren, practically. You realize, where's the time to be in anxiety? And if I'm in anxiety, then I'm very ungrateful about what Krishna has already arranged. Just look at the books now. These books are reaching, hundreds of thousands of people now. Right while we're sitting here, Russia is printing 10 and 15,000 of every copy of my books. I have my schedule. First time I've ever done this. My schedule now, I just sent it to Kripa two days ago. I have my whole schedule, the framework for next year. For this year, up into next. So, I'm doing about 20 courses, different places. So I got to do a lot of time in thinking about what to present, how to give different things. And in each place I'm going now, a lot of places, most of them, it'll be at a time there is big gathering, conference, festival, where just one place I can meet a lot of devotees and be able to give hopefully a course that helps to bring some transformation in some ways. And so now all of that's arranged, and so I'll be putting a few things in between that, but it's like most of what I'm going to do for the next year, is already scheduled. So it's, what Krishna's showing me, hold it. It ain't about you. That here's the stuff now, you just plug yourself into it. We've arranged it for you now, this way. You just plug yourself into it this way. I got all my tickets and everything, practically. It's just amazing. The only place I have to try to work in now is Mauritius, because I have disciples there, and I have, just gugobs of people in the government. When I was there last time, even though there was the hurricane and stuff, I did all of this stuff I filmed for TV. And now during the whole year, it's just been playing and playing. I did about 12 TV programs. And the devotees are writing me about the amazing effect, that it's had, within the countries. So like one place after another, opportunities, struggles, problems, but many, many devotees who we can give love to each other, and we can take that love and we can offer to Srila Prabhupada. So whether they're economically strong or not, or this or that, as well as myself and those who are a little more astute, they realize, hopefully some of you will all realize more and more, that whatever's going to go on, it's going to go on. We try our best. That's all we can do. You try your best. You may make a lot of money, you may make none. You try your best, you may be healthy, you may not be healthy. You try your best. One thing may go right, something else goes wrong. All right. That's what your world. But while that's happening, we each have the chance to let all of that disempower us, put us in gloom and frustration, or we have a chance to not to accept it and to reach out and appreciate what is there. And so this is, basically what we want to share with you today, is that there is something very powerful in letting go in a very thoughtful way. You're not blind following, but letting go and accepting more of what Krishna has arranged, having more gratitude, so Krishna will arrange more. There's a lot of power in realizing that all of the external things are there, but they will come and they will go, and they will disappoint you if you're taking your life centered around such things. And realizing that the mind is so strong that if you don't really organize and engage your mind is going to engage you. If you don't realize, just how powerful, when Arjuna was saying the mind is more difficult to control the wind, how much of a universal message he was sending to us. And that it's the mind being tricked and engaged and focused in some ways where it cannot create problems, or that mind creating problems for you again and again and causing all kinds of extra work and extra pain. Each person, you know, can make a choice. They're going to suffer, or if they're going to struggle with adventure, excitement, and with chance for accomplishment. Now, I realize that most devotees will have difficulty here, because most devotees don't keep watching what's going on in their minds. And so the tendency is, you know, to get comfortable. It doesn't mean we have to always be on edge. It means we always have to be using and channeling the mind into something that we want it to be about, rather than letting it control us. Really have to see the mind as an enemy who's so close. And so if you let that enemy have its way or have its freedom, it will just find one way after another until it weakens you to the point of destroying you. And so this is arranged by Krishna to allow us to become anti-material. It's arranged by Krishna to see what is really our priority. It's arranged by Krishna to see if our real orientation is more for material madness or spiritual madness. And nobody can interfere with your spiritual progress unless you allow it. Nor can anything interfere with your spiritual progress unless you allow it. And if you have more desire for sense gratification, the mind is going to create, is going to draw you certain things, you know, that will accommodate that. And if we find that we have more desire for such, and if we're not praying for Krishna to check it, then it just means that for now, the only way we're going to learn that we're going to have to suffer until we've suffered so much, we're ready to make a difference in our lives. And it's sad, but a lot of people, this is the way that they learn. They have to undergo doing the unhealthy, suffering, till finally they realize, hey, you know, I got to do something different. This is not working for me. So I'll give the class tomorrow. I'm going to try a major part of the time that I'm here to try to structure courses for when I do travel later. But I'll be available from time to time. But the important thing is that, you know, you're adults, and the community that we're all living in is based on what we all bring to it. And so we have to all decide what we want to bring to the community. My concern is that we keep certain boundaries, but what you make of the community is what you make of it. What you want to see happen here, it's up to you to make it happen. I want to be in the background to facilitate boundaries. But if I'm trying to be true about what I'm writing and speaking, that I don't want followers, I want leaders. But I don't want anarchy. In other words, leaders are not just people who are on an ego trip about their own idea. Or leaders are not people who can't be sensitive to what others' perceptions and needs are. They're surely people who don't just wait around and complain or just be cynical, or just look at what isn't going right. They're ready to see. Now, if I'm looking at what isn't going right, I can say, okay, this is a terrible period of my life now. I've been healthy most of my life, got all this stuff, and I can, you know, get a whole lot of space about that. But, you know, that's not where I'm going to allow myself to go. Or I can look at so many of you and say, okay, so some people are going to come and they leave after a little while and they leave and they go here, they go there. And some of you making vows and you just take the vows, you know, very lightly. You think nobody knows. But you have to suffer in some ways to experience why something unhealthy isn't good and why, you know, why to do the right thing. Anyway, I think you understand the points I'm trying to address. Is that things are happening for everybody. This Gitanagari Dham sometimes can be appreciated better when you go, and then you have chance to come back. I mean, I'm going all over the world, and I just can't wait to get back. You know, and at many places I can hang out, but you know, I can't wait to get back when I can come in. When I come into Washington, I have a chance now to catch up and get a view of what's going on in the world. I talk to devotees. I had a chance to check out CNN and get a perspective. Then when I come here, then along with email and all that stuff, then I have a chance to get internal in this way. I mean, this is the little time I've been here, and already I'm just, you know, each hour, you're just feeling more gratitude. That's it. Okay, so we kept you much longer than I had anticipated. Anyone have any question? Any comment? Don't forget, if you're not living in the ashram, give your donation for the book to Pariksit, if possible. Yes, pass the microphone.
As far as like how the mind goes, sometimes I was just wondering, like, how do we keep from letting our mind cause us to base our spiritual life on what someone else does or what someone else does to us or how someone treats us, but to actually keep the focus on Krishna and to keep focus and be strong? Because sometimes I find myself going in, you know, dips into that and trying to keep above that, but it's like it gets a little hard sometimes.
First, there's always going to be people doing different things in different ways. Somebody checking over there? Somebody's going. Which kid is that? He's stuck in the swing? Okay. So, there's always going to be people doing different things in different ways. And some of the ways and things they do may be even better than what ways that we're doing stuff. So sometimes we need to not just think we're tolerating somebody else, but also to try to look and see why they do what they do. And what we may even be able to learn from what they're doing. The other thing is that when somebody is doing something that is not so wonderful, it becomes a chance for us to look at ourselves and to focus on what has caused them to act in that way. So perhaps we can avoid the same thing happening to us, or we can try to see maybe there's a way that we can help them. If we can't help them, we don't want to be brought down by them. Or if we can't help them, we don't want to hurt them. Because after everything is said and done, every single person is evaluated separately by Krishna and by Guru. And so no one is evaluated the same. Even though we have very basic things that we're all accountable for, still we have different adhikar. We're covering with differences. And there are different mitigating circumstances that, you know, we're all subjected to. So, sometimes we see that Bhaktivinoda would mention how when he sees somebody not chanting, he would think, oh, this person has already finished their round, so let me work harder and finish mine. So it's easy to get so distracted by all kinds of negative things. And then you lose enthusiasm, impetus to do what can be done. And that's an ordinary way of, you know, how to exist. But when there's more determination, more respect for oneself, more respect for others, then the individual is not going to display into, you know, the negatives. Not be in denial, but not to play into it. Yes.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj. I was just thinking about some of the wonderful disciples. And I just wanted to share with the devotees, in being in India and just traveling in India, how I met so many of these devotees from different places, South Africa and Russia, India, in different places, and we came together for different programs, and I was just amazed. Just before I left, I met one girl from Australia. She was traveling, actually, with a book of activities that you had done at the farm. So someone had arranged for her to meet me. When she came to meet me, she brought that book. It was like a photograph book. And it had all these amazing pictures of you preaching in Australia. And I was thinking about this girl and how much love she had. And that love was demonstrated by her so eager to show all the different preaching activities that were going on. This was my first time meeting her. And then I had a wonderful opportunity of traveling with her.
Was it a disciple or aspiring disciple?
She's aspiring. She's been aspiring for a while, and she's been wondering about initiation. She's getting married, I think. She was in law school or something like that. And there was another devotee. These are devotees that just touched my heart. She was from Russia. She is from Russia. And she and I had an opportunity to travel on the train from Mayapur to Vrindavan. And she spoke not very much English, but somehow just in those, that maybe day and a half of traveling with her, I could just feel so much love that she had for you. It was just amazing, these devotees. I was thinking about how maybe 10 or 15 years ago, some of us, you know, we had that same kind of zeal, that kind of enthusiasm, that kind of devotion, dedication, wanting to just assist in the preaching work, just be a part of what was happening, what's happening. And I was realizing that these things are still happening. We may not be able to see them so much because, of course, we're so engaged in doing the different maintenance programs that we're doing. But I was just so happy and very thankful, like you were sharing, just thankful to Krishna that I was able to get this opportunity to see you in another arena through your disciples, through these new disciples. Because these new disciples, they're so special. They have so much your mood, and they have so much this desire to want to serve you and serve what Srila Prabhupada wants of this mission. And so I'm very thankful to all of the devotees that gave me this opportunity to take some time away from Gita Nagari. I also was thinking that Krishna says to Arjuna, he says, this material energy of mine is very difficult to overcome, but one who surrenders unto me can easily cross beyond it. And I was realizing that we do have you as an example of someone that has surrendered and has crossed over it, in that you don't have the same kind of challenges that we're having in many cases, because you're showing us how to do it. But sometimes we get so covered. So I want to apologize to you for all of us and all of our covering. And I want to thank you that you continue just so strongly going on with the work. And even fools like me and so many of us, I'm sure Krishna will arrange for us to get uncovered. So thank you very much.
Any other question or comment, anybody else?
Hi Krishna. I was hearing you speaking about all these wonderful activities, preaching that you did everywhere in the world. And I'm wondering, I don't know how I can express that properly, but sometimes it feels that, I mean, I know that those activities that the disciples, your disciples are doing all over the world, those activities are very much pleasing you. And somehow I know that this project here is also very much pleasing you. But it seems like it's harder to see sometimes because we don't have the proximity of the enthusiasm that's generated from bringing people to Krishna consciousness. And because we're so secluded in a certain sense, mm-hmm. we tend to, at least for me, I can tell, like this winter was hard because there's a lower energy because there's less reciprocation, and I'm not to the level of being able to.
Most pleasing to you, if I know these energetic activities that they're doing are very pleasing to you, and here you see that some of us are kind of drowning in some kind of spiritual apathy. But if you have some words of help, maybe.
Yes, this is a very, very important point. Is that Krishna consciousness does work, one of the ways it works is that as we give, we receive. So when we are either in a situation or not, either directly we're not able to give or we're thinking that we cannot give, then there's a problem. We find that we start drying up. Now, we want to give outside, we want to give inside. Outside, we want to find more ways how we can share what we have. And so, you know, we were doing the state college program sometimes. Some of you were going out and distributing some books, and we were going up for Harinam sometimes. But there should be more effort, especially amongst the young devotees, because your energies are so more scattered. You have more chance to go out, and you also can interact more in that way, and will feel more satisfied. The other thing is within the environment that we find more ways to give to each other. See, at the end of the day, yeah, I keep bringing this. They said it's in South Africa, not the end of the day. That the courses, the classes, all of these kind of activities are good, but doesn't really show your Krishna consciousness until you have to sit with yourself. And so that becomes also very hard again if the mind isn't stronger. And when you think about it, Vrindavan, whether Vrindavan on this planet or Gokul or Golok, it's not a place where we have to preach to people in business. It's not a place we have to worry about medicine, doctors. It's not a place we have to deal with interfaith. It's not a place we have to do media. All that stuff is just all secondary. But it's a place where we have or are to be absorbed in simplicity and devotion, selflessness, and a sense of community. So there is a lot of excitement in doing all of these things. My excitement is more when I can come back and in one sense be away from it, but appreciate, you know, what I was used to be able to do. But it's good for us to have these opportunities. But as we have or don't have, we still have to deal with ourselves. And sometimes, to be honest, sometimes we are holding devotees up together artificially by keeping them active out in the world, because they're going to have to come and still deal with themselves at some point. And if they're not able to deal with themselves in a life of more simplicity, they're not very advanced. They're not going anywhere. They have to keep coming back into the environments of passion, where they have to do many things except giving their love in their hearts. See, this is why, you know, I'm kind of less disturbed than some of you as I see you struggling, because I realize that you have to do this. That you're getting like a postgraduate arrangement. It's just that you need to have more philosophy so you can be able to deal with it, obviously. But people who are just going out on sacred time doing these things is wonderful. But they still got to deal with themselves. And at some point, they haven't developed a richer inner life. They're just putting off for when they're going to later bloop or later go into Maya. It's like we could have some of you now. We could just allow you to go off the farm and just go traveling sacred time and like anything. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be more spiritual at all. Even though you may be more active. Then the real test is when you come here or Vrindavan, or you come someplace and you have to now live a simple life of a sadhu. How much are you really able, you see, to do that? And that's a serious issue. And that's why these projects like our farm communities are the most difficult, but they're the most original to what we really have to do, ultimately. You can have some devotees, and they can travel for festivals, they can travel for Harinam, they can travel this preaching engagement and that preaching engagement, and they can hide behind all of this. Still not really have to deal into having to be around people, where they have to really deal with what's in their mind, what's in somebody else's mind, deal with real personalities, spiritual issues. That really shows, you know, where they really are. Now, some people can go for years and years and years of running away. But at some point, Krishna is going to set them in some situation where they're going to have to deal with themselves. And they either start working more and connecting with Krishna consciousness, or they'll find a rationalization to leave. I mean, some of the people who came here who thought they were a little Krishna conscious, it's very superficial. Because then they really had to see themselves and they realized that they want mature energy. And so that will be there. And I'm not trying to say in any way that everybody should just sit here on this farm and just only look at each other and just hang and just, you know, struggle to get the services done. No, not at all. You know, it shouldn't be like that. Should be that there should be alternatives. But the point is, this, and not the city, this is the Sattvic environment. And this is where you have to learn how to process your Krishna consciousness. Not in the mode of ignorance or mode of passion, where there's all kind of stuff, you know, to hide, to hide behind. Then you say, well, we're not ready for that. So we let people die, come here and just hang, and then die, and can't hang, and die. And then bring somebody else, and then let them stay, and let them die. No. That's upon yourself to see how you can also have some variegatedness while you realize that this is the idea of processing Krishna consciousness in a sattvic environment. And this is why the 64 principles of executing devotional service, it means that one should live in the holy dhams. It's an integral part of the process of Vaidhi Bhakti. And this is why some people, when they go to the sacred pilgrimage places, after a few days, you know, they're crawling, you know, they want to get out of there. Because their devotional service and mind is so much in the mode of passion. Now, what is difficult is that the farm and the rural environments are much more geared for householders. For somebody who really trying to be single, this can at some point, it can be difficult. Because it is more of an environment for, for families. So, you know, it's an interesting dichotomy. The thing is that we want activity, we want variegatedness, we want to be off the farm, want more people to come on the farm, want to go out, want to interact more, because we learn, and we learn from variety. But after all that's done, we have to realize that Krishna consciousness is consciousness. See, when Hare Krishna Maharaj fell, it should have sent more than any other time a message to our whole society that Krishna is really not that concerned about the external work over our internal consciousness. It's good that we try to have a lot of, you know, infrastructure and things, and, you know, let's hope we can. Let's hope we can get guest houses, so we can get school, so we can get clinics, so we can get hospice, so we can, you know, be able to do a lot of farming and all of these things. So we can have more people coming so devotees are not frying each other out. But maybe, maybe not. But we shouldn't lose the interest and desire and internal focus on wanting to do those things. Whether Krishna allows it or not, that's totally up to Radha Damodar. We have the duty to put the energy into it, agitate our minds, and, you know, and how best that we can do it. And then it's up to them. Now, if we're having the energy and putting out, whether it physically happens or not, it's been offered to Krishna, and he's accepted. When there is economic problems, when there is, as I don't know what you are hearing, but, you know, we've talked about it many years ago. We don't speak about it much because after the Y2K stuff, everyone kind of not think about these things. But I think you're hearing that the earth is shifting. And after a while, everything's going to go upside down. And we're going to see like a whole different, what we call, you know, present-day material existence. And, you know, this is something that, you know, can't be denied, is that the earth is shifting off its axis. And everything is about, you know, getting ready to come to a point where it's all going to get shaken up. It's So where there was land, there will be water. I mean, what do you see? The seasons are just crazy. Some places, you know, the different animal life and the amphibian life is all changing. See, as Americans, being in America, we don't see death so much. We don't see war. We see wars always other places. We don't see major shifts happen, you know, in the society so much. So there's an artificial kind of security. It's changing gradually. Because now even people are beginning to realize, even if you have government jobs or whatever, you still can one day not have any jobs. Even though you got a pension, you can still wind up, you know, not having a pension. Even though you can have 3 degrees, you can wind up, you know, without a job. So people gradually realize, you know, all these college degrees, you know, and no jobs. Any last question? Yeah, it means that we live on two levels. We live, yes, all this stuff is going on, all these physical things we have to do, all these plans we have to try to carry out. At the same time, there's other part of us that should be trying to see, focus more on, you know, on consciousness. A lot of that consciousness has to do with what is going on, how you are engaging the mind. See, because, you know, we see what? We see in the material world that in all kinds of sectors, people are struggling in some way. We see spiritually. We see spiritually. We see devotees who have big positions and they're miserable. See devotees who just doing odd and end stuff here or there and they're miserable. We see some devotees in odds and ends, and they're happy. We see some devotees who know so much, and they're some of the most miserable devotees that we have in this country. Think that we have some scholars who have just drinking the philosophy, and their life is very rich. And we have some scholars who have been deep into the philosophy, deep into Sanskrit, and they can't chant rounds. They're offensive, and they're on practically in and out of drugs, etc. So it ain't really as easy as we think about. You just do this physical thing, you do that thing, it's going to make it work. It's much more of an internal arrangement. You got devotees with so many kids, and they're in total anxiety. You got devotees with no kids, and they're in. You have people who have so much money. There's some devotees now who are multi-millionaires. They've inherited. And their lives, they're miserable. And I know distinctly what's going on in their consciousness. What's happening. We've got some devotees who don't have a clue where they're going to get $5 from next week. And they're free spirits. And they're happy. And I know quite, you know, the number in that category also. It doesn't really come down to so much just the external, because once we do this or do that externally, we haven't changed consciousness, we're going to find other problems. See, Krishna consciousness, it's not something you can bluff so easy, because you're either becoming more conscious or you're becoming more fixed in the external, in the material. when we somehow appreciate each other more, realize how each person is really working hard in their own struggles, then we can honor each other's existence more, be more able to support each other, and not just kind of be too much into our own suffering or idea or problem. And we can enjoy, you know, the struggle. One of the things I really found impressive about the Russian devotees is that they're very poor. You've got to explain, half the hospitals in Russia do not have running water. You know, most of the public facilities, you know, do not have toilets. You know, even hospitals, even 55% of the hospitals, you have outdoor toilets, you know. So it's really a third world country in so many ways. Devotees really, really struggle just to get a little money to do something. But they have amazing, maybe communism has a good sign in this way, but they somehow really think about the other person. You know, and they share. And I've watched it for a couple of years now, visiting Russia. And I'm just amazed to see the enthusiasm of having so little, but being able to share, even though having so little. And then from that there's a richness, you know, that people experience. Any last thing?
Haribo. So good to see you back, all glories.
I'm as outrageous as ever.
And all of the my God brothers and sisters and the Vaishnavas is here. It's good to be back on the farm. And you so eloquently just explained the thoughts and questions that I wanted to ask and share and with the devotees that are here. And I want to share with you that you are truly in a very special and auspicious place and time for what is going on in the outside world. Because we are constantly being bombarded by electronic, print, sound, and all types of other espionage to control our minds and to put us in anxiety. And there's a special presence and protection that you have being isolated in this particular area that you are. That you are not being bombarded as we are, especially at this time in America, that you may not be aware because you don't have the facilities. So even though there may be some anxieties that are going on here, it is 10, 20, 100 fold in the outside world with what is coming across on the radio and the media, because it is even more blatantly controlled than when you were once exposed to it before, because of the spiritual struggles and what's going on in the world and what is happening here in America. And as Guru has shared with you, how the outside world looks at us here, the play that it is focusing on our minds. People in the outside world are literally going mad in all of their aspects of life. So take refuge and know that even though you may have anxieties and some questions and some things, it is 100-fold out there of how we are being attacked and what's going on, because there is, as Guru has said, a spiritual war that is going on, and it has intensified like I have never seen before at this time in which we're in.
I mean, now you see so many people walking around with suits, talking to themselves, mad as a bat, you know. See people, you know, just enraged like anything. Airplane rage, office rage, you know, road rage.
The murders, the things that were normally suppressed, and the attitudes in which the government had, they're clearly coming out and just saying their position and taking it. So you're so blessed, and I'm thankful just to be here and to be in your association and to know that everything the Guru says is within yourself and in your heart, that you have to be able to understand the Krishna's arrangements that he has made.
There are, you know, some people who are pious, who are distinctly moving out of the cities now like anything. They're paying a lot of money to get places, you know, outside of the cities. But, you know, we should know when we just go into the cities, you should be able to feel the difference. Any lesson?
Not to beat the point to death, but I was just going to make the same comment that, especially since they started the war and everything, that the environment in the cities is really, really intense. It's just amazing that people are really agitated and, you know, a little on edge, and you know, you can feel a difference in just, you know, in your day-to-day interactions with people. It's just amazing. So.
You gave me this book you sent over to me about the since September 11th. number of people who now are getting more into addiction and things like this. Yes, yeah, so the U.S. government has done some study on this also. And there's an acceleration of people who are getting more into alcohol, into drugs, into violence and things like this, of this nature.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Even within the neighboring cities around here, it's all accelerating. So all this is not just happening, you know, just by some accident. It's in the stars, the collective energy, the collective mind culture. Mm-hmm.
The other point that has come out is that Mars is closer to the Earth than it's been in, 72,000 years or something, so we're being, and that's war, the planet of war,
yeah.
Right?
It's so war energy. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think someone else? Then we stop now, especially since we got the voice from the city here to help us become farm boys for a couple of hours. Yes, I see. Now, one thing, today is known as appearance day. What is the age? How old? 27. A Hare Krishna to you, a Hare Krishna to you, a Hare Krishna to Chanda, a Hare Krishna to you, Riva. We still need to hear how old you are.
I had so many places. I normally go up into the mountains, and I broke my fast today. I've been on a fast, and I normally go away and go into solitude on my appearance day. But when I found out some of the crew was coming down, I could think of no better place to be to render some service on my appearance day than here. And I thank you for the service.
How old?
47.
Bhakti Tirith Swami Ki Vaishnava Thakur Ki.